Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Research Ireland
on News Talk.
Yes, this is Future Proof on News Talk. I'm Jonathan McRae. Now, something that we really don't think about enormously, mostly because we don't want to think about, is that we use animals in medical research. And often, these animals experience pain. We do our best to reduce that pain, of course, and we have to get ethical approval for every research program that we do that involves animal pain, but it happens. And if we want to get rid of it completely, there are a few things that we might try. And one of them is to create bodyoids. Here to talk to me about this is Hank Greeley. He's a professor of law and expert in bioethics at Stanford. He joins me now. Hank, let's talk about, there are different approaches to this, right? But the philosophical problem of how we reduce animal pain in medical research is an interesting one in itself, right?
Yes. Suffering is suffering. And if you worry about human suffering, the non-human animals that we cause to suffer through medical research or through things like agriculture also impose an ethical burden on us.
And historically, you know, there have been efforts to try and do away with this through the courts. There is a famous case that keeps popping up. I think it's in New York, trying to give personhood to chimpanzees who have been used in research, so that the law views these animals as persons and therefore give them extra rights. But that, of course, that cannot work from a current system point of view, right? The way we undertake animal research, if animals were given the same rights as humans, it would be game over for medical research.
It would be very hard to do a lot of really important medical research that not only prevents human suffering, but sometimes the medical research helps for veterinary drugs and other things to help animal suffering as well.
So how did you get interested in this, and how are we talking about bodyoids?
So I learned about the idea and the, I think, ugly but eye-catching word bodyoids when I got an email from one of my Stanford colleagues, a stem cell scientist named Hiro Nakauchi, who has done lots of interesting things with stem cells and with genetic manipulation. His idea is make animals that cannot feel pain, cannot have consciousness, but still are useful for purposes of medical research. And one of his most extreme version of this, and I don't know whether I think it's going to work or not, is to make animals that don't even have heads at all. But short of that, you can make animals that don't have brains at all, or animals that don't have the parts of brains that would be responsible for consciousness or pain.
And so this idea of creating sort of unthinking, unfeeling sort of organ and tissue sacs, but that are living and have the same biological processes that normal animals might have, it throws up a lot of ethical questions, which I presume is why you're so interested in it. What do we need to think about if we were to go down this path of essentially breeding animals that don't feel and don't have brains?
You know, first, though, it's important to remember that for the last 300 years or so in the West, until recently, our general philosophical position is that animals were automatons that didn't have any feelings. Sort of from Rene Descartes on, the idea was animals don't feel or think. They just look like they feel or think. Well, we don't believe that anymore. So if all you're interested in is relieving suffering, the idea of doing this has some great attraction. On the other hand, should we really be changing the nature of our fellow creatures, changing the nature of animals in this way, and not just changing it, but changing it in a way that lowers their normal function, that sort of degrades their normal function? Is that an appropriate thing for humans to do?
I mean, is it even medically possible to do this?
So that's a great question. And I'm not a scientist. I am a lawyer, a law professor. The scientists think that there is a chance that they can do it. And in fact, they've already produced some mice that both Nakauchi and there's at least one company in this space in the Bay Area have claimed to produce mice that have no heads. Now, these mice die as soon as they're born, but they hope to get better at it. We don't know first whether we'll be able to do this. And we don't know second, even if we do this, does a mouse with no head tell us much about mice with heads, let alone about humans with heads.
Yeah.
So there's both the problem of, can we make it work at all, and does it, how relevant is it for human health? And the answers to that are, we don't know.
And of course, you know, the idea that these animals aren't suffering, you know, I'm always struck by the story of the executioner. I read an account of an executioner who was responsible for a lot of legal killings in America in prisons due to the death penalty. And he was talking about how, you know, it seems quite peaceful and it seems like the person isn't in pain, but that's because they're paralyzed beforehand. And actually, some of the drugs that had been used historically for death row were extremely painful, but it never looked like they were because of the nature of how they were put to death. And so, you know, assuming that these animals don't feel pain because they haven't got heads, is there any way of knowing that in a way that's ethical?
Is there any way of knowing it absolutely, positively, not any conceivable doubt? No, but that's true about just about everything in this world. We think we have good reasons to think that without brains, there's no consciousness, there's no brain, there's no pain, there's no perception at all, that brains are crucial to how to perceiving the world. And we see some, we think, with people who have had severe traumatic brain injuries or strokes or other things, so that their brains aren't functioning. They don't seem to respond to anything. And further, we have this concept of brain death. If your brain is not firing, if nothing in your brain is working, we'll consider you dead, even if your heart is beating and your lungs, thanks to a ventilator, are putting oxygen through your system. So we're pretty sure that brains are crucial. Can anyone prove that beyond any doubt? No. In the American criminal system, for a conviction, the standard is beyond a reasonable doubt, not beyond any conceivable doubt. I think we can say beyond a reasonable doubt that brains are essential to pain and suffering. But that's not beyond all doubt.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and Talkspace, the leading virtual therapy provider, is sharing the message that connection is crucial because good relationships are an essential and sometimes overlooked component of mental well-being. If your relationships could use some strengthening, a licensed therapist from Talkspace can help. Therapy can help you communicate better with loved ones, repair conflicts, and understand how to address loneliness and build community. It's easy to sign up. Just go to Talkspace.com and you'll be paired with a therapist within 2 days. You'll meet with your therapist online on your schedule. Plus, Talkspace is in network with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. Make personal connections a priority and start today. If you're not covered by insurance, get $80 off your first month with Talkspace when you go to Talkspace.com and enter promo code SPACE80. That's SPACE80. To match with a licensed therapist today, go to Talkspace.com and enter promo code SPACE80.
If you're just joining us and wondering what the hell we're talking about, I don't blame you. You're listening to Future Proof. We're speaking to Hank Reilly. He's an expert in bioethics at Stanford. We're talking about, you know, the question that some scientists are trying to pursue is whether or not we could create animals, could be used for animal testing, potentially even donation of body parts like xenotransplantation. There's, you know, the pig heart is very similar to the human heart. Whether or not we could create ethically sort of organisms, animals essentially, without heads, without brains, so that they don't feel, and how would we feel about that ethically? And there's been, like, you have a colleague, John Evans, in UC San Diego, who's actually kind of asked people about this, right? Because even if it was possible, is that something that we would want to, it just feels very, ugh. What has John found out about it?
So we have a technical term for it in bioethics. We call it the yuck factor. Somebody hears something and they go, oh, yuck. What John has found is that often what ordinary people are worried about isn't so much what the bioethicists and the scientists are worried about, and not necessarily so much about pain or consciousness as it is a connection to what that animal is supposed to be like, whatever we think that means. Now, I've grew up with dogs. And had lots of friends with dogs, big dogs, little dogs, in between dogs. All of those were wolves. we turned wolves into chihuahuas.
Yeah, I was finding it crazy.
We have a track record of manipulating living things to make them more convenient for us. That's what we do. Mm. This is a more extreme case of it. But, you know, we've also made some breeds of dogs that have health problems because of the way we bred them. We are master manipulators, and that's not necessarily a good thing. This is another step toward it. And I would, you know, also remember, it's not just about medical research. It could also be about meat.
No, for sure. And it also could be about human body parts, right? I mean, we talked about xenotransplantation. If we could grow, you know, pigs that never felt pain but grew sterile hearts that humans could use as transplants, you know, would that be a good thing? And if that's the case, why not just create humans with no feelings or brains that could be used to give you a good pitching arm, you know? Like, I mean, like, where does your work go into figuring this out in terms of bioethics?
So my work goes into figuring out what the right questions are, or what the questions are, not necessarily answering them, and not necessarily believing that my reactions are the reactions that we as a group should have. I think that all these ethical issues work on at least two levels. There's the individual level of, do you want to be involved in this? You know, if you were offered a slice of bacon from a pig that was engineered to have no brain, would you decide to eat it or not? Mm. And then at the group level, does the community, does the government, does this culture want to accept this or not? Those aren't questions for me to answer. Those are questions for individuals to answer and for collectives to answer. But it's good for them to have people who've explored both the science side of it and the ethical ramifications before they make those decisions. And that's kind of what I try to do. Plus, it's really interesting.
Absolutely. I mean, you could talk about this forever. You know, just this isn't a theoretical, by the way. You know, there is a company called R3 Bio, billionaire-backed startup. They want to start growing these sort of organ sacks, for want of another word, replace animal testing. But, you know, they're connected to the longevity movement. They want in the future to be able to use this as a replacement strategy for human longevity. If you're a billionaire, you want to live for a very long time, developing this technology so you could, you know, get a new pair of legs, when you get a bad knee. That is, you know, that is theoretically what we're talking about. Science fiction is going to cover this so many times. It never ends well in science fiction. Do you think this is all sort of just tossing stuff around, or do you think, you know, we may one day have to reckon with this in a real social discussion with real consequences?
So look, I live in Silicon Valley. I'm used to people who are throwing money around on wild and crazy ideas, 90% of which will fail. The 10% don't fail. And there's no good way to know in advance which 10% won't fail or not. I think that this is plausible enough that it is worth us thinking about. Mm. Do I think it will happen? I don't know. I don't know whether it's how scientifically plausible it is. And I don't know how socially acceptable it would be, but I think we should be beginning to have a conversation about whether we think this would be a good thing or a bad thing. And that's a broad conversation. It's not just scientists or ethicists or the person in the street. It's also people with diseases who hope that animal research will help lead to the cures for their disease. There are a lot of voices that will need to be heard, and it's better, I think, to try to get that all out on the table before the headless mouse is out of the barn.
Yeah. It is one of those things that, you know, that you think, oh, no, that's terrible. It absolutely shouldn't have to do until it's your wife, your son, your daughter, and you realize that actually this person could be saved if we had a headless body sack. That then becomes a very real question. Really interesting to speak with you. Hank Greeley is a professor of law and expert of bioethics at Stanford. Thanks, Hank.
Thank you.
Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Research Ireland
on News Talk.
The Sleep Outfitters Memorial Day sale is on. and you can save up to $1,500 store-wide. For a limited time, save up to $500 on adjustable sets from Tempur-Pedic and Sealy. Or get a purple king mattress for the price of a queen. Plus, enjoy free next-day delivery and setup. And our exclusive lifetime price guarantee means you always get the best deal. Don't miss the Sleep Outfitters Memorial Day sale going on now. Save up to $1,500 store-wide. Only at Sleep Outfitters.